Hi, this is Nicole Hemsoth, editor of HPC Wire, here with today's edition of Soundbite, our daily interview series featuring researchers, thought leaders, and newsmakers in the world of high-performance computing. On today's edition of Soundbite, we'll be talking with Dr. Elizabeth McNally, a professor of medicine and human genetics at the University of Chicago. She and her team have adapted a Cray XE6 supercomputer to achieve the parallelization required for concurrent multiple genome analysis. This approach not only markedly speeds computational time, but also resulted in increased usable sequence per genome. Hi, thanks for joining, Elizabeth.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So if you could, a lot of our readers and listeners are computational experts, but maybe not genomics experts. So can we talk about the value of whole genome sequencing and what does that mean overall for research and medicine?
That's a great question. So there's been a revolution in the ability to sequence DNA, and that's commonly referred to as next generation sequencing, or also known as massively parallel sequencing, so that millions of base pairs are determined at the same time. And so what that means is it's now possible to sequence entire human genomes in relatively quick order. And to put this in perspective, the first genome, which was solved in around the year 2000, took about 10 or 15 years to do and cost $3 billion. And now a human genome can be sequenced in probably a day, and for far less than that. And recent news reports actually put it now possible to do a genome for about $1,000. That's just the sequence. That's determining the sequence. So the pressure is on right now to reduce the price associated with the analytical end of that, and also to improve the speed and accuracy of the analytical end.
Right. And what are some of the computational challenges? I know that you're not on the computer science side of this, you're on the research side, but what do you need that still isn't there in terms of the systems that are designed to tackle these problems?
Yeah, so the real issue is that even a single genome is really a big data problem. Because this is all done as short read sequencing, each little sequence is about 100 base pairs in size, and you have to cover 3 billion bases. And for accuracy, on average, you cover an individual base, each one of the 3 billion, at a depth of about 30 to 40 fold. So you can do the math on that and recognize that we're looking at billions and billions of these short read sequences that have to be aligned into the string of 3 billion. So that is a computationally very intense process, because that alignment to the reference sequence is actually what takes a great deal of time.
Right, and of course, data intensive, because I believe that a lot of these tools that you use not only require a lot of data, but then they output quite a bit of other data that's then used for reanalysis. Is that right?
That's correct. There are multiple different steps through the alignment and cleaning process, and then once you've done that cleaning and aligning, then you call the variance, which is how each base differs from what's considered the reference sequence. And so a typical number of differences for just small single nucleotide differences is around 4 million differences that you're trying to determine out of the 3 billion.
That's amazing. And how much data are we talking about? Can you give us some frame of reference?
Yeah, so usually when we do the sequencing, it gets packaged and sent to us in different ways, but it's over 100 gigs of data. And then through the analysis, it goes a little over a terabyte of data. And that's for an individual genome.
And do you usually keep all this data around stored somewhere every time you do this? I would imagine you have massive archives there of projects that you've run.
Right. So what we try to do is we certainly keep the original sequence files, but through the process of analysis, we do generate many additional files. And the goal is to distill it down to what we call the variant files. And the variant just is a file of those 3 to 4 million differences per person. So those become much more manageable, but the intermediate steps do generate a lot of data. So because right now we have access to the supercomputer, we can keep those intermediate steps, and we did so through the process of optimizing the sequence analysis. But I think long-term we won't really be keeping all the intermediate steps. We're really focused on generating the variant file and then having those for comparison purposes.
Right. Okay, that makes sense. So let's talk about the adaptation process for the Cray supercomputer. I know that you didn't do that yourself, but I'm sure you have a fascinating take on what they needed to do to serve your purposes. Can you describe that?
Yeah, it was quite a challenge because so we bit the bullet and jumped off and decided to do a bunch of whole genome sequencing. And I'll just mention that that's different than a lot of other people have been doing, because most people have been struggling with the analytics of doing whole genome. And so most of the field right now is doing what's called whole exome sequencing, which is just focusing on the 1% of the genome that is the coding region, the part that actually makes proteins. But we think to really do a full analysis, you really want the whole genome. You don't just want the 1%, even though it is the business 1%. There's a lot that happens in the non-coding regions. And furthermore, the capacity to actually get the 1% is an imperfect method. And so we think to have a better data set and to really look at the variation in a human, you want whole genome. But we accepted the fact that the analysis was going to be more complicated. So many centers have moved towards having biological computing clusters, you know, large sets of servers and cores to help do this analysis. And when we first start trying to do our analysis, we realized that the clusters really weren't well designed for handling even just a couple of whole genome sequences at the depth that we were working with. And that's when we contacted the Computation Institute and Ian Foster's group. And he was very interested in the idea because we had access to a number of whole genome sequences at high depth. And so we got a team together, which involved Lorenzo Pesci, who's a staff scientist from the Computation Institute, and Megan Puckelwartz, who's a PhD working with my group. And they're the ones who really set about basically adapting the accepted programs for doing genome analysis, but made it work within the Cray environment. So most of the programs are written in Java, which is pretty unusual for the supercomputing environment. And what was really unique about Beagle was that it was one of the Crays that actually could run Java. And so that helped a lot. And basically what we used was a lot of open source code that is available through the Broad Institute. So there are programs called GATK and BWA is another one. And so they were able to make these run within the supercomputing environment and essentially use what has become the standard for genome analysis, but to do it in a manner where we could really take advantage of the size and scope of what the supercomputer could do.
Fascinating. And so before this, can you describe what the environment looked like for this point of analysis? What were you using before?
Well, unsuccessfully, we had been trying to run BWA and GATK in the computing cluster, our biological computing cluster that we have at the University of Chicago. But even just trying to upload the number of sequences for a single genome was proving problematic, because it's the amount of data transfer that really has to happen, and that's where the supercomputer really does a better job.
Ah, makes sense. Okay. I have a theoretical question for you. I mean, there are dedicated machines for sequencing. Do you think that there will be a time or an absolute need for dedicated supercomputers that are just focused on this analysis that you talk about?
I think it's a very logical progression to think about using supercomputing for this. And I keep thinking it's very similar to what a lot of the physicists and the chemists faced maybe 10 and 20 years ago as they were getting into domains that were computationally more intense than they were used to. And as a biologist, I don't think we've been so used to thinking about things that way. But really, this is a very natural use of a supercomputer. There are a lot of big genetic projects going on right now, like the 1,000 genomes and a number of other things like that. And, I mean, the analysis can go so much more quickly in the supercomputing environment. So, to me, it seems a natural next step.
Mm-hmm. And so what about the scalability of your application? I mean, do you hit a limit where, you know, just adding more cores doesn't really help the problem so much because things break down?
You mean for using a typical cluster or using the supercomputer?
Using this adapted supercomputer in particular.
Yeah. So, I mean, our theoretical calculations right now are that we can do 240 genomes in less than 2 days. And a big component of that is actually just the unpackaging the data in the form that it's sent to us. So we actually think we can get significantly faster if the data is packaged differently and how it's sent to us. And some places have actually tried to work on starting the analysis as the upload is actually happening. So those are a couple areas where we can potentially gain even more speed. But, you know, to be able to do 240 genomes in 2 days is so dramatically faster than anything else that can happen that, you know, in a way I'm pretty happy with that.
Sure. What a dramatic advance. Absolutely. So what are some of the research horizons for you and your team, even if they don't touch the computational science aspect of it?
So right now, the analysis of genomes is very focused on what are called single nucleotide polymorphisms, or SNPs, single base pair changes in the sea of 3 billion. And another focus is on very small insertions and deletions, so where one or two bases might be missing or inserted. And most of the algorithms and alignments are pretty good at detecting those single nucleotide either changes or insertions and deletions. What we really want to move towards is improving the analysis of slightly larger structural variants where anywhere from tens to hundreds or even thousands of base pairs are deleted or inserted. And having the power of the supercomputer will let us test existing algorithms and then improve those so that we can more reliably call these structural variants. So in other words, if you're missing a few thousand base pairs of DNA, we want to be able to detect that because we think that's really important information. And then there are areas of the genome that have been harder to get at, for example, repeated DNA regions. And so the fact that we can redo the alignments, setting the parameters in different ways, setting different quality scores, will let us really do things in a way that people working in regular clusters can't do, because we can so readily redo the analysis, redo the alignments, that we can really test different parameters.
Oh, that's very exciting. Well, Dr. Elizabeth McNally, thanks again for your time. This has been fascinating. I have 1,000 more questions for you, but they'll have to wait for another time. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you.